You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Tuesday, October 4th, the feast day of St. Francis of Assisi. Kiss a Franciscan today, or at least hug one. 5734-BREAD-4 if you want to be a part of the program anytime during the day, during the show today, 5734-BREAD-4. Or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. A couple of guests on today's program at the bottom of the hour. We're going to have Dr. Wesley Ely on the show. Dr. Ely, who is a physician, teaches actually at Vanderbilt University at the medical school there. And he wrote a column, and I've had him on before, actually. I had him on to talk about a column he'd written about a baptism performed in an ICU. He's a devout Catholic physician, part of the Catholic Medical Association there in the Nashville area, has written extensively on his faith and how it impacts his practice of medicine. And he wrote an article in the National Catholic Register about what he sees when he goes in to visit a patient. It's not just the patient, but also the presence of Jesus and also the presence of the saints. And so we had a conversation, was able to catch up with him yesterday and have a conversation that you'll hear at the bottom of this hour. And then in the second hour, we're going to talk to Ms. Suzanne Schulte. Came across her name in a story that I encountered about the suffering of Christians in North Korea. And Suzanne Schulte was quoted in the piece. She has worked for years as really one of the world's leading activists in the North Korean human rights movement. She began a program actually 20 years ago to host the first North Korean defectors in the United States to speak out about the atrocities being committed there in the Hermit Kingdom against the people of North Korea, including the political prison camps and the horrific treatment of refugees. She was awarded in 2008 the Seoul Peace Prize, and she's received numerous other awards as well. And she'll give us a picture of the situation in North Korea as best as we can tell, and particularly for those of faith. From what I understand, there are no priests in North Korea. One of the things that she mentioned to me in an email is that the organization she's a part of actually recorded and broadcast a Catholic Mass in North Korea for Easter last year. So I just think it's always good to have a better understanding and a bigger vision beyond our own immediate experience of the faith and understand that those who are suffering throughout the world. I credit John Allen with Crux in his great work in highlighting suffering Christians throughout the world. I think it's always good for our own perspective, for our prayers, and to know in what way we can be helpful and be active and engaged in the suffering of our brothers and sisters throughout the world. So that'll be a conversation we have in the second hour. Looking forward to that. Some other things we'll talk about today, more on the real presence, peace and the stigmata, and why you're never too old for your first communion. We'll give you the question of the day in the next segment. We'll spin the Dollar Catechism wheel. We'll look back in history and we'll give out our What Were You Thinking awards. All that and more coming up on the program today. Hope you had a great afternoon after I left you yesterday. Mine, for the most part, fairly low-key, though I went to a freshman football game last night and got to do the PA work once again. Was a lot of fun, even though our team didn't do too well. Really, it's that's kind of living the dream, though, doing the PA work. As I said, when I was a kid, I always wanted to be a sportscaster, so that's letting me live out the dream, I guess you could say, to a certain extent. Today, as I said, the Feast of St. Francis of Assisi, of course, one of the towering saints in the history of the Catholic Church, born Giovanni di Pietro di Bernardoni. and formerly named as Francesco, was an Italian Roman Catholic friar and preacher. He founded, of course, the Men's Order of Friars Minor, the Women's Order of St. Clair, the Third Order of St. Francis, and the Custody of the Holy Land. He's, as I said, one of the towering saints, one of the most venerated religious figures in history. He was canonized by Pope Gregory the Ninth on the 16th of July, 1228, so really only less than 2 years after his death in October of 1226. He, along with St. Catherine of Siena, is considered the patron saint of Italy. You know, one of the things that that I was thinking about with St. Francis is that often is not remarked about is he really was the first Christian to evidence the marks of the crucifixion, known as the stigmata. I think the stigmata is one of the most fascinating phenomenons in the Christian faith, and I think it's captivated many, even who are otherwise non-believers. I remember a number of years ago, I think it may have even been before I was Catholic, reading about the stigmata, the marks of Jesus and his crucifixion on the hands, on the side, on the feet, on the brow, that have appeared and manifested themselves in certain persons throughout really the last, 800 years since St. Francis. And I remember reading an article. It was from a secular source about the stigmata, describing the various persons who have borne these marks. I don't know if we really call them afflicted or not, because it's for the believer, just as St. Paul said, he bears in his body the marks of Jesus. It is considered a singular privilege, though a particularly painful one. But I remember reading in this secular source about the stigmata, just a last line that has always stuck with me. It simply said, science has never been truly able to explain the stigmata, and that it left it there. It's a great mystery. There have been all sorts of skeptical proposals, you know, that it's some sort of psychosomatic reality induced by one's own mental obsession with the suffering Christ and so forth, which, quite frankly, seems to me a significant stretch. But the thing that has occurred to me, you know, Francis is known as one of the things he's known really as a saint of is a saint of peace. Of course, we're familiar with the prayer attributed to him, though I think it's been pretty much debunked that he actually wrote the prayer. But it's certainly in the spirit of Saint Francis, the make me an instrument of your peace, where there is hatred, let me so love. It's a beautiful prayer. And we all long for, we see a world torn apart by division, whether it's in this election season, whether it's the serious places of bloodshed, heck, whether it's the Ryder Cup, we see a world torn apart by division. And we yearn, as I think people of faith, we yearn for peace, and peace that goes beyond merely the absence of conflict, but peace in the rich biblical sense of shalom, which is a fullness of God's goodness and reconciliation and all the rest. And I think there's a lesson to be learned here regarding St. Francis and the stigmata, that the path to peace requires those who are disciples of the Lord to take upon themselves the suffering of the world. How did Christ bring peace? Christ brought peace through his own crucifixion. He united. I'm trying to find it here because I love the way that it's described by St. Paul. And you know, when St. Paul said that in Galatians about bearing in his body the marks of Jesus, I don't think we necessarily think those were the stigmata, but I guess we can say we really don't know. But in the book of Colossians, this is what I'm looking for right here, because this tells us, let's see, let me find it here. It's in one of St. Paul's letters. Maybe it's in the letter of Ephesians, in which he talks about how Christ, here we go. I'm going to find it here. There you go. Here he says this. This is in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 13. But now in Christ Jesus, you who once were far off have become near by the blood of Christ, for he is our peace. He who made both one and broke down the dividing wall of enmity through his flesh, abolishing the law with its commandments and legal claims, that he might create in himself one new person in place of the two, thus establishing peace, and might reconcile both with God in one body through the cross, putting that enmity to death by it. He came and preached peace to you who were far off and peace to those who were near. Here's, I guess, my point. If we want to be instruments of peace, it's going to involve, if not literally, certainly in the suffering that we endure as peacemakers, bearing in ourselves the marks of the Lord Jesus. Are we willing? We admire St. Francis, apostle of peace, saint of peace. We admire him for bearing in his own body the suffering of Christ. Are we willing, for the sake of peace, for the sake of reconciliation, to allow evil to be absorbed into ourselves, to suffer as those who seek peace always suffer, united, of course, in Christ's suffering, that our suffering may be a fragrant aroma? St. Francis of Assisi, increase our faith, pray for us, that we may be more fully conformed to our Lord Jesus. We'll be back with more. This is The Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Minutes past the hour. You're back on The Mike Allen Show. Here on Breadbox Media. Want to learn more about Breadbox Media? Just go to breadboxmedia.com and you can check out all of our different contributors from every corner of this country and across the heartland as well. You can listen to podcasts of your favorite shows, even subscribe through podcasts on Google Play, iTunes, or Podbean. You can also support your favorite show by becoming a friend of the show, and through your monthly support, receive access to exclusive online content. Download the app for your digital device so you've always got Breadbox Media in your pocket ready to go. So check it all out at breadboxmedia.com. Asking a question of the day today related to your medical care. And my question is this. I'm going to be talking at the bottom of the hour with Dr. Wesley Ely, who is a physician and a professor at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine, who is a devout Catholic. We'll be talking about a column he wrote in the National Catholic Register, A Doctor's Prayer Seeking Saintly Aid. And one of the things that Dr. Ely does, and he'll talk about this in our conversation, is that he asks patients about their spiritual history or religious history. Is there anything that they want him to know as a physician about their spiritual needs that he can keep in mind as he treats them? It's a very open-ended question. He doesn't impose his faith upon them. He just wants to know. And he said that he always gets a really good response from that. Even if a person is an agnostic or an atheist, he gives them the freedom to share that, and because it'll help him as a physician treating the whole person. But my question is this. So all things being equal, does the faith of your doctor or lack thereof mean anything to you? I mean, are you just, maybe you're of the opinion, you know, just as long as they know their stuff, as long as they're a good physician and they're professional and committed to my care, it doesn't matter to me if they are a Christian, doesn't matter to me if they're Hindu, Buddhist, Muslim, or if they're no faith at all. Or maybe it does matter to you. Love to hear your thoughts on that. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. I mean, I'd say all things being equal, I would love to have a Catholic physician. That's just me. Doesn't mean I don't appreciate it. I had a rheumatologist a number of years ago that I saw for several years who was raised in Pakistan. I think probably a nominal Muslim, as far as I know. We never really got into conversations about faith, but a very, very decent man and excellent physician and very excellent professionalism, but also very tender in his care. So I've always appreciated that as well. But, you know, if I could, I would certainly love to have someone who is a devout Catholic as my physician. 573-4BREAD-4, you can chime in on that question. 573-4BREAD-4, you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. I think you'll enjoy my conversation with Dr. Wesley Ely. Perusing the sports this morning, wow, the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, if you'd have told Minnesota Vikings fans, what, 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, whenever Teddy Bridgewater went down with a pretty brutal leg injury, which put him out for this season and even possibly part of next, if you'd have told the Minnesota Vikings fans, who live, I think, in a perpetual state of anticipatory grief, I mean, it's tough to be a Vikings fan. You know, you were sort of the Buffalo Bills before there were Buffalo Bills, losing four Super Bowls back in the 70s. Haven't been back to the Super Bowl since. Had that team, that really incredible team, with Randy Moss and now I'm forgetting the name of the quarterback. It'll come to me, I'm sure. Great team, 15-1 regular season, got upset by the Falcons. I guess that was back in the 90s as well. And I really haven't been a team of significance since then. So to be sitting with Sam Bradford at quarterback at 4-0 with an absolutely devastating defense. You want to know how devastating? Just ask Eli Manning last night. The Vikings, I think, perhaps along with the Eagles, establishing themselves as what appear to be the clear favorites to be the NFC's representative in the Super Bowl this year. Now, it's early. I understand that. But, boy, Coach Mike Zimmer, for Minnesota fans, they've got to be pretty excited about things. Another interesting piece I saw when it comes to football was speculation about a coaching carousel of mammoth proportions in the college game after this year. And it's going to be interesting. You know, Charlie Strong from Texas, whose seat is incredibly hot, had that opening win over Notre Dame and since then struggled. Losses to, I believe it was Oklahoma State and to Cal. There are many who feel like he is going to be out of a job, along with Les Miles, who is already out of a job at LSU. So you're going to have Texas and LSU hiring. Certainly the possibility of Auburn hiring a new football coach. And also USC, possibly, and Oregon. So, you know, you start going down the list. Because what happens is, you know, there's a domino effect. The big schools, the big plum jobs get somebody, and oftentimes they take somebody from a lower school and so forth and so on, and down it goes. So that, I think that's an interesting thing to keep an eye on. Of course, baseball playoffs getting ready to start. We'll keep an eye on that as well. Wild card, I think first wild card playoff game will be played today. And the other, of course, big story, still a lot of reflection on the events in Hazeltine. We talked yesterday with my friend Mark Randall, who had been up there to attend. And a lot of the buzz after the U.S.'s 17-11 win, their first Ryder Cup victory in over a decade. The big talk has been whether or not the behavior at Hazeltine among the U.S. golf fans crossed the line. And I understand it's a fine line. I mean, the thing about the Ryder Cup that makes it so different than the button-down golf that you usually see in the PGA Tour was that it was raucous. It was more like an English football match. And by football, I mean the European kind, right? Anyway, you've got rowdy fans. Evidently, it was observed that people were popping a cold one, you know, around 7:30 a.m. for matches that then continued on throughout the day into the evening. And so the presence of alcohol free-flowing, the overall nature of the event makes it tough. And, you know, it's hard to gauge how much is simply the, you know, the disappointment of the European team and their loss. But I think there's something to the criticism. Certainly, there is a line that I think was probably crossed many times. Rory McIlroy seemed to be particularly bothered by it, though, that he certainly didn't have any hesitancy of egging the crowd on. So, anyway, I was really glad to see the U.S. I had this feeling watching it on Sunday because the U.S. had this big lead, but it sure seemed like early on in the one-on-one, the singles matches, the mano-a-mano stuff, that the Europeans were going to make a similar rally of what they've made in the past. And so I was preparing myself for the disappointment of that, and as well as for, you know, the fact that the U.S., as we talked about last week, made the mistake of smack-talking before the event began, even though they were had been losers in the event for at least a dozen years before. So glad to see it all worked out for the U.S. Anyway, let's move on to our What Were You Thinking nominees of the day. We've got a few here we can draw from. This is from Reading, Ohio. Woman made up clown attack because she was running late to work, right? Go dumb or go home. That's the motto of this segment, our What Were You Thinking award. Woman made up clown attack because she was running late to work. According to this story, Alexandra Conley, 18, of Hamilton. I mean, haven't we all done things when we're 18? Who wants to be held accountable for that? She called police around 6 a.m. Saturday, saying a clown jumped over a fence, waved a knife at her, and cut her left thumb. Conley described the suspect as a male wearing a clown suit with a red wig, white facial makeup, and a teardrop on his left cheek. All the way down to the detail. Police said Conley was calm as she was being examined by medics, even using her cell phone to access Facebook. After an in-depth investigation, police found several inconsistencies in her report. Conley admitted to making up the story, police said, because she was running late to work and didn't want to lose her job. This clown stuff has to stop, ladies and gentlemen. Just tell them you're late to work. Now, oh my goodness, the clown story. That's something else. Let's see what else we've got. Let's see. I know we've got a couple of others here. Oh, yeah. Maryland police impersonator tries to pull over real police officer. If you're going to be a police impersonator, be careful who you stop, right? This Maryland man posing as an officer turned his lights and sirens on behind a real police officer, official said. John Vincent Angelini of Baltimore, 51, was arrested Wednesday as he trailed an off-duty detective driving in an unmarked car. Uh-oh. Yeah, that's not good. But the winner we're going to give to this guy. What state are we in here? Hopefully it's not Kentucky. Maybe Florida. Tennessee, even better. My neighbor to the south. Anyway, an apparent dispute between two neighbors in Drummond's, Tennessee, resulted in one neighbor deciding he was going to bulldoze the other neighbor's house. Evidently, around 2:15 a.m. Saturday, a neighbor called emergency officials to report that Mr. McClellan was bulldozing his neighbor John Higdon's home. Yeah, and of course, Higdon wants him to pay for damages. Imagine that. It's all fun and games till somebody bulldozes your house. We'll be back. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show. Get my question of the day. All things being equal, does the faith of your physician or lack thereof matter to you? 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, if you want to call, or you can text that number as well, or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or post a response on Facebook or on Twitter. Had the opportunity yesterday to catch up with Dr. Wesley Ely, Dr. Ely, who teaches at Vanderbilt University. He is a medical doctor and a subspecialist in pulmonary and critical care medicine with a focus in geriatrics. He conducts patient-oriented health services research as a professor of medicine at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine. He is a graduate of Tulane University, where he graduated Phi Beta Kappa and summa cum laude and earned his medical degree from the Tulane University School of Medicine. He's very active in the Catholic Medical Association. They're not only there in Nashville, but also nationally. I had him on before in an article that he had written in the Wall Street Journal about a baptism in ICU. The most recent article that we discussed was his column in the National Catholic Register from this summer called A Doctor's Prayer Seeking Saintly Aid. Here's my conversation with Dr. Wes Ely. Hello, Dr. Ely.
Hi, how are you, Mike?
I'm doing well. Thanks for taking time to be with us today. Before we jump into the article you wrote this summer for the Register, I do have to ask a question from your Catholic Medical Association bio. It said that when you went to Jesuit high school in Shreveport, you helped carry cigarettes and gin to the rectory of your favorite teachers. There's got to be a story there.
I didn't think you expected to see that in that bio, did you?
I love it.
Well, it's a great memory. Father May and Father Fosenlogan and all the other priests that took their time to teach us, they did have their eccentricities, and we as Jesuit boys were happy to oblige.
That's fantastic. So we're talking about your piece in the National Catholic Register that you wrote this summer, A Doctor's Prayer Seeking Saintly Aid, and you kind of put the scene here of you at the bedside of a patient as a physician, and you talked about the various things that you see, both the patient in front of you, and then maybe that which can't be seen. So talk about that a little bit and maybe your sort of Catholic imagination.
Sure. Well, as a physician, you know, walking through the halls of a hospital with my long white coat and my stethoscope, every time I enter into a room, I try to keep it in the forefront of my mind that I'm not walking in by myself. We have the saints and Mother Mary and Christ and the Father and the Holy Spirit always with us at all times. And I do believe that it's a holy vocational calling to care for others who are suffering and in need. And so there's no way I'm approaching that person's bed by myself when I can be armed with the beauty and the wisdom and the love of all of those other people who've come before me and who are there to help me choose the right words, actions, and make the best decisions for my patient.
It's got to be exhausting. I mean, I know that, and maybe it's more so than it's ever been in terms of the numbers of patients that you see. I guess it would probably be easy in your exhaustion and with your workload to see people as diseases or conditions rather than as persons.
I think that we do have the temptation to do that, but when you walk to the bedside and look in somebody's eyes and say to yourself, this is Jesus Christ, made in the image and likeness of God, if we can keep this in our RAM and do this bed to bed to bed, or person to person in the mall or at the traffic light or wherever we might be in life, it helps me a lot as a physician to do this. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me, just as I'm looking in their eyes and the wellspring of either hope, sadness, pain, suffering, or joy that I find there, that this is something way beyond a specific heart disease or liver disease or cancer.
Mm. Just about a month ago, we saw the canonization of St. Teresa of Calcutta. You mentioned her in this article as someone, as a young medical school student, who really shaped your vision in this regard.
And she is, because I remember walking through the large wards of Charity Hospital in New Orleans in the late 80s, early 90s, learning that when she was asked, what, Mother Teresa, do you do? How do you pick up these people out of the gutter with their vomit, their flies, their sores? And she said, very simply, beautifully, I look at them in the eyes and I say, this is Jesus Christ. And when she does that, everything else goes away, and now she's caring for God. And so that's where I learned that. It's not something that I invented, but I was graced with that by Saint Mother Teresa of Calcutta. And I try to put that into my practice every day.
We're here with Dr. Wesley Ealy, who, and talking about his article in the National Catholic Register, A Doctor's Prayer, Seeking Saintly Aid. So when you're at the patient's bedside, you see the patient, you see Jesus Christ in distressing disguise in the midst of the patient, but you say that you also see some other persons in the room that perhaps you as a Catholic are especially mindful of.
There are special saints in my mind. Dr. Muscati, Dr. Giannamola, that's a woman and a man, just to mention two of the many. And, you know, Giannamola, a modern-day Italian saint, and Muscati as well, she died shortly after giving birth to her child. She was advised not to give birth to end the pregnancy because it would risk her life, and she prized and treasured the sanctity of life and would not do that. And so in the end, she did die peripartum from her baby, baby's birth and complications thereof. That baby is now a physician in Italy. I've met her. She is, this family is so beautiful in their focus on their mother, Giannamola, who is now a saint in the Catholic Church. And then Dr. Muscati, who went into falling down buildings in the middle of earthquakes and took care of all the poor people, much like Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati in Turin, who did the same thing. And these are the people that I call on, and I say, you know, Giannamola, Dr. Muscati, Giorgio Frassati, please help me right now. Get me back focused. I'm tired. I'm distracted. I'm getting beeped. I've got to go to the clinic. All these things, but no, please keep me focused right here. What am I to do? What am I to say? What is my next decision? Please help me not to overlook this soul in need.
Do you find you're both in the medical community and in the academic community? Do you ever encounter those, whether it's colleagues, whether close or more detached, who view your faith as a liability to your effectiveness as a doctor, or view that just in general?
Most certainly, and I think it's an important cautionary note for all of us. For example, it would be a liability, and it can be a liability. Religious faith can be a liability when it is used in a way that ignores the reality of someone's condition. If somebody, for example, said, hey, my faith is I believe in miracles, everything can happen with God, and then they ignore the very true reality of this person actively dying, they might push too hard and invoke interventions that would put somebody through undue suffering. And so in that sense, religion can be a liability. On the other hand, religion can also be a liability if you're such a believer in the afterlife that you think, well, everything's going to be better when this person's dead, that you don't aggressively intervene. So that's why this is so important, and that's why I spend so much time trying to strike the balance between intervening and doing what we can appropriately, proportionately, and ordinarily, and avoiding the disproportionate and extraordinary decisions. And that's really where the fine line is that we have to do in our practice and in our life, is do what is ordinary and proportionate and forego what is extraordinary and disproportionate. And this is also the thing that all of us know we're not perfect at. But I think it's in any way important from an atheist or an agnostic's perspective who would caution me and say, Wes, you know, I'm worried about your faith. I would say, good, good. Please do worry with me about that, and let's work together so that I don't overuse it or underuse it. And in no way should I use this power differential at the bedside to proselytize my faith on anyone else.
There's also, I'm sure, an ongoing need to help educate patients, and particularly Catholic patients, so that they understand what Catholic teaching is and isn't when it comes to end-of-life issues.
That is so true. And right now, we have a lot of misunderstanding about that. And a lot of people think, gosh, you know, I'm a Catholic, therefore I have to do everything. And that's not the case. You have to do what is proportionate and ordinary and forego what is disproportionate and extraordinary. So I won't repeat that again because I've said it three times. But I think that you're getting the point that this is a very important piece of Catholic teaching. It is in line with Catholic bioethical teaching. And we get it wrong all the time. So we have to focus back on things like Evangelium Vitae that Blessed Saint JP II the Great wrote for us. And if anybody listening to this wants to read more and get straight what Catholic teaching is, then read Evangelium Vitae.
Absolutely, and I know the Catholic Medical Association is a great resource there too. Do you ever find that a patient, when they discover a mutual faith between you, asks you to pray for them?
This happens quite often. I always ask the patient, do you have any spiritual values that you would want me to know as your physician that would affect your medical decisions? And in taking such a spiritual history, I get the answer from the patient about whether or not they are atheist, agnostic, or Buddhist, Hindu, Baptist, Muslim, whatever. And then I can, out of respect for them, steer my care for them in line with their spiritual values. I'm not here to invoke my values on them per se. I'm here to serve them in light of their spirit, their mind, body, spirit status. So I try and adjust our conversations and such to make sure that we respect the patient's spiritual values.
Dr. Ely, I appreciate your time and your great work and your writing, of course, as well. So blessings to you, to your family, and to your ongoing vocation of medical care.
Mike, thank you so much. It's my privilege to talk to you, and I look forward to it anytime.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Ely.
Bye-bye.
All right. We'll be back in just a minute with more. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this feast day of St. Francis of Assisi. St. Francis, pray for us. My question of the day is, do you, all things being equal, does the faith of your physician or the lack thereof really matter to you? 573-4BREAD-4, you can call or text 573-4BREAD-4, or you could email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. You can also post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. Shannon responding on Facebook and the Mike Allen Show, the handle there. His or her personal faith is not important to me, but his or her understanding and respect that mine is meaningful to me is. I think that's a great point that Shannon makes there. And that's one of the things I appreciate about Dr. Ely. And what he shared in that conversation, if you missed it, you want to check it out on the podcast, he said he asks patients for their spiritual history. And if there's anything that important for him to know as a physician about their values and about their faith, I think it's a great question to ask. It's not an imposing one. It's simply an open-ended question and allows them to share. You know, one of the things that, sometimes I'll get phone calls from people in my work, full-time work, which is director of family life. And one of the things that come under the umbrella of my ministry is teaching in natural family planning. We have a few teaching couples here in our diocese who teach fertility awareness-based methods of natural family planning, fertility stewardship. And one of the things I get asked sometimes is, do you know of any NFP-only physicians in your area? Physicians who believe only in natural family planning as a licit and moral means of fertility stewardship and regulation, and I don't know any. who are OBGYNs, for example. But I do know, but there are a few that I hear from folks who are at least NFP friendly. In other words, they respect the patient's desire to live out their Catholic faith. And really, I don't want to just call it Catholic faith, because really it's a natural law issue. These are universal moral truths. But so oftentimes you get physicians who are very disrespectful and condescending to people who do not want to use contraceptives, don't want to sterilize. It's so much standard operating procedure anymore when a woman has her second child or more to be asked if she wants to go ahead and have a tubal ligation, for example, or to be warned, you know, they ask the question, what kind of contraception are you going to use? It's just a given. So I think Shannon makes a great point there to have a physician who respects and is knowledgeable. That's the thing. You know, I've got a friend who's a priest who for years was a practicing OBGYN. You can imagine the jokes that he had to endure in seminary. My goodness. But anyway, he talks about how, you know, and then he's only about my age. He said, and I'm 50, when he was going through medical school, that they were woefully uninformed and on fertility awareness-based methods of family planning, which actually do work, believe it or not, if used properly. I was one of the best testimonies I got on that. I was teaching some engaged couples, and we were talking about the concept of natural family planning and this idea of being aware through your physical symptoms of that fertile window in every woman's fertility cycle, her monthly ish, I say ish, because it can vary even in the same woman from month to month. But the fertility window and being able to identify it through certain physical symptoms and abstaining periodically if there's a serious reason to avoid having a child or to delay a pregnancy. And I was talking about the basic principle and concept of it. And I had an Irish guy. We have a lot of Irish people here in the central Kentucky area where we broadcast from, many of them here because of the thoroughbred industry. And this gentleman raised his hand and he said, I'd like to say something. And I thought, okay, because you never know what you're going to run into. Usually you speak to engaged couples about this sort of thing, and you could see that sort of proverbial wall going up between you and them, because it's a difficult teaching at the Catholic Church in terms of within the cultural climate we now live in. Very countercultural, this idea that every sexual union between spouses should be open to life. And so I was sharing, you know, talking, and this hand went up, and I thought, oh no, here we go. And he stood up, and he's, you know, and I'm not even going to try to imitate his Irish accent. If my son was here, we could do that, because he loves the Irish accent. He's got it down pat. But basically, he said, look, he said, I've never learned about natural family planning before, but I can tell you that this basic principle of recognizing signs of fertility is legit. He said, it works. He said, you know how I know? He said, I'm in the horse breeding business. And we do this all the time with a high degree of accuracy. It was one of the best unsolicited testimonials that I'd ever received. I don't know why I went down that squirrel trail, but making the point, I think, that Shannon said that, you know, it's not so much about the personal faith of her physician that concerns her as whether or not her faith would be respected. I think that's a really, really good point. 573-4BREAD-4, if you've got a comment or a question, 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. I just got word I'm going to have Inez San Martin on the program tomorrow. She, of course, is a correspondent with Crux. She lives in Rome. She's just fantastic. And she was on the Pope's recent trip to Georgia. And I'm going to have to do a little research before I can pronounce this other country's name. One of the fascinating things I found about that papal trip to Georgia is he gave a mass in a stadium there. Now, you got to understand that the Christian population in Georgia is, I think, over 90% Eastern Orthodox, not Roman Catholic. And, of course, there are sort of historical tensions from the perspective particularly of the Orthodox. If you've learned from my conversations with Father Tom Galloway here on the program, who is an Orthodox priest, usually a lot more a lot more bad feelings sometimes from the Orthodox toward the Catholic Church, and particularly the papacy, than vice versa. And I get it, okay? It's this concern of sort of this hegemonic papacy and its desire to, like the blob, absorb everything, I guess, under its umbrella, whatever. But anyway, I guess there was a large Orthodox delegation that was going to show up at this Mass. There were no shows. And so Pope Francis, who you're used to swarming crowds, last year, just about this time, maybe a little over a year ago, I was in Philadelphia for the papal visit. Took us an hour just to get through the security line. I mean, city was packed. What an odd sight it must have been to see Pope Francis saying Mass in a stadium with hardly anybody there. So we'll have to talk to her about that tomorrow. But the Pope, with some interesting comments on the plane interview on the way back, talking about issues related to gender theory and transgenderism. According to this story from Crux, from Enos, who we'll talk to tomorrow, Pope says walk with trans persons, but fight gender theory. Now, there's an interesting picture here on the story. I'll post a link to it on the show's Facebook page of Pope Francis standing here with Greg Burke, who was the new Vatican spokesperson, took over for Father Federico Lombardi, who retired. Greg Burke, an American. Anyway, he's standing there flanking the Pope on the plane. You know, these plane interviews with Pope Francis have always been a little interesting. Somebody needs to get a snapshot of Greg Burke, Vatican spokesman, now, so we can compare it maybe in about 5 years after he's accompanied the Holy Father on a few of these plane interviews. But anyway, aboard the papal plane, as it says here in the story, Francis, in one of these more informal Q&A sessions with journalists, he once again blasted what he called the indoctrination of gender theory. And in this interview, distinguished the church's pastoral accompaniment of homosexual persons, which he encourages, from what he described as the, quote, indoctrination of gender theory. And the Pope said, and this, of course, is a translation, which is always dangerous. He said, first of all, I've accompanied in my life as a priest, a bishop, and even as a pope, people with homosexual tendencies or even homosexual practices. I've led them closer to the Lord. This was after a journalist asked him about how to accompany a person who fought for years with his or her sexuality, who feels that there's a biological problem and that his or her physical body doesn't correspond with what they consider to be their sexual identity. Francis said some people can't get closer to the Lord, but the Pope said he's never abandoned them because people must be accompanied as Jesus accompanies. When a person who has this condition gets in front of Jesus, the Holy Father said, Jesus won't say leave because you're homosexual. On Saturday in Georgia, Francis evidently had described gender theory as a global war against the family. And he goes on to talk about, this ideological colonization that makes people believe they can actually change their gender, change their sex through surgery, through hormone treatments, or whatever. Pope Francis has great compassion and yet also is a believer in objective truth. And Pope Francis goes to great pains to say, please don't print in the paper tomorrow that the Pope will sanctify transgender people, because I read the headlines in the newspapers, he said. In other words, the Pope's Catholic, newsflash, believes in what the church teaches, believes in accompanying people with the tenderness and mercy of God. Sounds like a pastor to me. We'll be back with a new hour. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.